Welcome back to the Boys Dynasty Fantasy Football Podcast. I am your co-host, Josh Schaefer, here with my co-host, new this week, back for the start of the regular season, Brian Henn. Brian, say hi. Good to have you.
What's up, boys? It is good to be back. It's a little bit of a mix this first week of the season. We get half of the Josh and Sloan duo. We get half of the Matt and Brian duo. It's a good way to start.
The kidless people. These are the only people who have time to do podcasts these days. You really have to cut out the non-essentials. I think this is a good place to start.
I personally cannot imagine choosing to give up the Boys Dynasty Fantasy Football Podcast just to have a kid, but I guess it shows that everybody has their own priorities, right?
It's been a dark summer, I would say, for the Boys Dynasty Fantasy Football Podcast. I think our last posting was in maybe January, maybe even before then, honestly. I don't even think we had an official congratulations to Tommy for winning the league. I think it was just, we were over it by that point.
You could have just replayed either of the other two congratulatory podcasts from previous years. That was enough.
Yeah. Well, I just saw a text from Mike. Kickoff is delayed now until 8:40 for the start of the game. So we have a little bit more time. Apparently some storms rolling through. They're making us wait for the start of football, but great time to start fantasy football. But before we get there, I know we were, Brian, talking about cars. I was telling you that, because Brian and I are chit-chatting when we joined the call. I was telling Brian that I had to get my alternator replaced this week, $1,800, sucky. My car is only worth $5,000, so 40% of my car's value spent on repairs. We debated getting rid of it. But one of the things I wanted to mention that I felt like was podcast worthy is a couple of months ago, or I guess this is maybe more than that, I was driving around, my check engine light comes on, and I'm like, oh shit, my car is pretty old at this point. It's almost 15 years old. And we're like 2 hours away from Seattle. So I drive back, it's okay. I take it in. And I'm going into the mechanic and I'm trying to act like I know something, right? Because, obviously the reputation of mechanics, you don't need me to explain it, but I'm like, oh yeah, I was taking my car in, I just got it looked at. I don't know what's going on. There's been some other problems, but just wanted to let you know. And so they look at the car and they call me and they're like an hour later, they're like, hey dude, there's no oil in this car.
Most basic thing you're supposed to do as a car owner.
Yeah, I didn't even check the oil. I'm like, oh, we got it checked out at the Napa. They looked at the engine code. Like, this is what it might be. And I'm like, yeah, there's no oil in my car. So I'm a pretty bad car owner. I don't know about you. Yours is a company car, so I would imagine that you're pretty.
Well, yeah. So I'm a little embarrassed to admit this, but ever since I started driving to Seymour, of course, I've burn through oil like there's no tomorrow. I'm keeping the oil companies in business single-handedly. Yeah. And because my check engine light would come on quite literally once every 6 weeks or so to get my oil change because I'd run through it that fast. And it literally took me a year to a year and a half to understand why it was going that quickly. It just didn't click with me that it was because I was driving so much that I needed to take my car in more often. I just thought it was a really shitty car that, had a lot of maintenance that needed done. And I was like, oh, yeah. So it finally clicked.
Wait, so your check engine light would come on when you needed an oil change?
Yeah, I'm going tomorrow, actually.
That's scary. It would have taken me a while, too. I mean, I feel like our group of friends really defies the, none of us are car guys. I don't think any of us are really let me get under the hood. I mean, Dylan changes his own oil, so yeah, respect to him. But I also think it's a waste of time to do that when you think about how cheap it is. No offense, Dylan. But
Same. I also feel like none of us are handymen either. Would you say any of the boys are super handy?
I think the odds are that our wives would probably wives/partners would be more handy than most of
Andy
the guys.
Is 10 times more handy than I am. she and her dad the other day replaced some fence boards on our fence at our house. And I wanted nothing to do with it. I was you two could go out there and have a blast. But
I know I'm so glad that Louise would fix something in our house if it went wrong. I'm just Louise got me a bidet for my birthday. And I was like, if you're not going to install it, I don't even want it as a gift.
Gifts that you have to install are the worst.
I legitimately told her that. I said, if you're going to make me install it, please just return it because I don't even want to deal with it. It will sit in the box for forever as long as I own it. So
that is
do you
so
have a
funny.
Bidet? Have you tried one?
We don't, but I seriously, I need to try it. Ian's parents have one. I need to try it.
So you've used it at their place or you've been scared?
Okay. Not at their place, but I've used it like in Europe and stuff, but it's a little uneasy. I've done it once or twice, but it was a while ago and I feel like I've been too scared to try it again, but I need to.
So you were scared the first time you tried it?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
What made you scared? What happened?
I don't know. I was younger, but like, I was like, I don't know, this just seems way too weird. I think I was like partially worried that I was going to like miss or spray the wrong direction or I don't know what was going to happen. So,
yeah.
But you're a bidet enthusiast.
Proud bidet. I think we're going through we're doing like a bathroom renovation, but it's just enhancing our bathroom going experience right now. So
nice.
We got the bidet. We also got one of those squatty, like not a squatty potty. It's like a nicer version of that. It's made of bamboo. So it looks a little bit classier.
Yeah.
But it just makes going to the bathroom great. I would say the only learning curve with the bidet is you don't need to go anywhere close to max water pressure, you know?
Really?
Yes.
I would have assumed that you did.
It will rip you open if you go too hard. So you need to keep that thing at below 50% at all time. I don't understand what would be going on. Maybe it's like as you use it more and more often, you build up a resistance, you know? And so then you need to keep going harder and harder to get... I'm just kidding. That probably wouldn't happen. But
We all know that the boys come to this podcast for bidet analysis. So I'm going to keep this going a little bit, but when you use it, do you press a button or do you like throttle a handle a little bit?
It's like a throttle. Like you can, like you're turning, like cranking the volume essentially on a,
so have you ever like been aiming for like 40% and you accidentally slip a little bit and you go to like 70% or something?
Well, it's weird with mine because it, so when you turn it on initially, the water doesn't spray hard enough to actually, like, it just kind of dribbles out. So you have to turn it up at least 50% for it to get like the momentum of shooting out of the water hole. But then you can turn it back down and it'll keep that momentum.
Gotcha.
So
you had that kind of initial burst.
Yes, burst. Yeah. And I think what was happening early on is I was doing too hard to get, because I would just like mindlessly just like turn it up too high.
Gotcha.
And I'm not gonna lie, yeah, it was painful. There was blood, you know. Yeah, but
bet.
Mine is supposed to be the kind of one where you could hook it up to the warm water, so it wouldn't be like just cold water from the back of your toilet. It could be warm water from your sink, but my apartment wouldn't let us do that, so we're only on the cold water. But I would say it is totally worth it. It is okay. Like, I mean, I use way less toilet paper now, and you just feel a lot cleaner when you go to the bathroom. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. Well, good to know. Maybe I'll give it a shot. Well, I'll report back later in the season.
That's my two things now, bidet and the purple pillow. Yeah. The purple pillow is great. So, yeah.
That's okay. Awesome.
Okay, Brian, anything else you want to talk about before we get into, you know, what we're here for, I guess? We haven't been here for it for a while, but I want to give you a chance. Any other plugs you have?
No, I don't think so. I excited for the NFL season. I was driving home from work today and I was like, man, it starts tonight. Like we need it. I got the itch to pod again. I feel like that's why I texted you. I was like, it feels wrong to start the season without having at least some type of primer, you know, podcast for the season. So
I agree. I was so glad that you texted me today because I know that Sloan wasn't going to text me because he was probably already asleep right now.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad we could get something on the podcast, which is a great segue into our initial topic. Matt may have had a baby. He may be off the podcast, but I know deep down he still loves analyzing the boys league. He sent us some power rankings earlier this week to get us kicked off. I think it's a great place to start. Brian, what was your initial reaction? Obviously, you know, some mixed news for you in terms of where Matt put you on the board, but how did you feel about, you know, the first power rankings that we're seeing for the season?
I texted Matt that I thought he did a really, really nice job with it. I thought it was clear he put a lot of time and effort into it. And I appreciate too that like he didn't necessarily just copy and paste the standings from last year, into his preseason power rankings. It was clear that, there's been some movement, which I think is reflective of what this offseason has brought us. I mean, there again, no reason you shouldn't be at the top. Like, it makes a ton of sense. Your team is way too good for having not won any championships yet. I'm sorry
Thank
to
you.
kind of twist that knife a little
That's
bit,
all right.
but I really liked the move bringing Mike's team, up into the top three. Like, it's kind of one of those where like it's time for rubber meets the road here. Like, it's time for Mike to kick it into gear and see if he can take it to the next level. This is kind of the first year I feel like that he has actual expectations, which is going to be interesting. Couple other thoughts. I mean, I agreed with Matt's analysis that I think I've gotten myself to on par with Sloan, which is funny because the other night he and I were texting and he told me that I was a rebuilding team. So I
Was he trying to
appreciate that.
trade you for AJ Brown at that point? Was
Yes, he
that
was.
okay?
He was
Okay,
trying to
good.
give me Gabe Davis and Gabe Davis in a first, I believe, for AJ Brown. So,
That's exactly what a rebuilding team would want,
exactly.
give up a stud receiver for Gabe Davis. Yeah,
I know,
that's great.
seriously. Yeah, so it was it I told him that I should put his trade offer in the group message just to see what everybody else thought of it, and he said if you want everybody else to know that you're too stingy to trade with, you should do that. So his to be fair, his initial offer was Gabe Davis, his own 2025 first and his 2026 second for AJ Brown. So
That's pretty bad, honestly. I mean, no offense, because if he gets AJ Brown, his team is really good. I think
Totally.
it's certainly in the top four.
Yeah. So anyway, that's just my own little, plug there. But I think I'd like to think there's a pretty big drop off between Sloan and myself and the Austin Matt Collin tier. Curious for your thoughts on that tier as well. And then I Angad like poor Angad, like I think it's probably the right spot for him. The roster is just not in great shape right now. I mean, he's clearly engaged. I think he can turn it around, but it's a dark spot probably for another year or two. What were your takeaways?
I mean, I also agree. I'll work my way from the bottom up, given that's where you end it, where you ended. I just think there's no case for not having Ongood at the very bottom of the league this year. I mean, the good news is he owns his own first round pick, right? So it is like a Ongood, hold your pick at all
That needs to be
costs.
a golden ticket.
Yes,
Like,
treat it as 1.01 from the second the season starts. Yeah, I think it is. There's no other way to look at it. So I think that's huge for Ongood. Collin, I think, is definitely the second team. I think he has some good players. Obviously, he had a pretty good draft this year, but the tough part for Collin is he does not have his first round pick this year. So, he's kind of incentivized, I think, to go in a little bit compared to some of the other teams down here, which I do factor in when I think about the power rankings, is like, what is the incentive for a team this year? Collin also probably Ongood and Collin, I think both probably a little bit less scared of getting last because they've already gotten last before, right? So the punishment's going to be better. But I think easy that these two are at the bottom. When you look at Ongood's wide receivers in this league, you would think we were in a 14 or 16 team league because his number one wide receiver is Romeo Dobbs, Jerry Jeudy, Jalen Tolbert, Mike Williams, Darnell Mooney. Those are his five starting receivers right now. And I don't want to pile it on. I know he's in pain. He's had rookies not pan out in Dotson and Johnston, and maybe too early to call it on Johnston. But yeah, dark days. I think those are easily the bottom two. I think Matt is maybe being a little bit generous with his own ranking. I think there's, in my opinion, Matt, Collin, Ongood are a bottom tier in and of themselves. I don't I'm not a huge I don't know. I don't believe in Matt's team that much. I don't love Daniel Jones as his QB2 with really nobody else there. I think it's very realistic Daniel Jones could get benched and then he has to start Minshew, which would be its own problem. Matt fortunately has a ton of first round picks. He has his own, yours, Mike's, and Collins. So he might be incentivized to make some moves to make his team better, and he has the assets to do it. But I don't know. Right now, I think he's potentially competing. I would actually put you, Sloan, and Austin kind of in a tier. Actually, I would probably say it's you and Austin in a tier. Sloan, I think, is a notch above you guys.
Yeah.
Kind of on the edge. You're in a weird year with Justin Herbert where you have a really good lineup, but limited depth. Who knows about Herbert? Austin, I think, in a similar situation. He has some really good players. JT and Saquon, both huge. But I think we're kind of sleeping on Sloan this year. Personally, I don't think Mike – I would flip Mike and Sloan. I think the playoff teams are still the top four that from the last year. I think Mike just has too much, like, young, unproven assets. Like, they're all names that you love, right? Jalen Waddle, Drake London, Dalton Kincaid, Tank Dell, Nico. You're like, oh, I love these guys. Young, high-value fantasy assets. But – still quite a bit of uncertainty going into this year. Maybe they all perform really well, but Waddle had a weird year. Who knows what goes on in Atlanta? Like, there's a number of question marks there. And Najee Harris and Devin Singletary are not who you want. I think for Mike, it comes down to, does he trade his quarterbacks this year? And does anybody buy them? I know when we were at Boys Weekend, we were talking about how nobody should trade for Mike's quarterbacks. And I'll just repeat it here so that anybody who listens knows they shouldn't trade. But what do you think about Mike? Like, do you think he will trade the quarterbacks this year, or do you think he holds them as, like, his positional advantage?
I think he continues to hold them, and I feel for him in the sense that I think his strategy makes sense, like, with how important quarterbacks are, but I think his quarterbacks are so good that it's like he has no like Gardner Minshew level quarterback, or, you know, Daniel Jones level quarterback, where everybody knows, like, it's probably not an asset that you can hold on to for more than a year or two. But, like, if somebody was in a pinch, they could go to him and, like, just, you know, overpay for, you know, a back half of the season starter, but it would only cost them, like, maybe a second and a third or something along those lines. The problem with his team is it's like he has the positional advantage, and it's awesome, but it's like for him to cash in, he needs somebody to be willing to part with huge assets to cash in. And I just don't know if there's anybody that's, like, yet in a spot with their quarterback room that they're going to be willing to, like, all chips in, you know, go for it with one of his quarterbacks, just because it's like they're all young. They're all good. Like, there's no, I don't know. There's no, like, C plus B minus level quarterback that he could get, you know, a good return for, and the person trading for them wouldn't have to give up an arm and a leg. Like, you get what I'm saying?
I totally agree with you 100%. I think Matt is probably the only team where I could see a potential deal in the works, but, you know, if you're Matt, I don't know what the quarterback picture looks like for next year's draft on the rookie side. But man, to get Trevor Lawrence, or I mean, to get Tua, you're probably having to give up two first round picks in 2025. And that just really hurts when you're
and that's like Mike's team. Worst.
Yeah. And if you're getting Tua for two first, you're not feeling good about that, right?
No.
Like, that is a scary bet to make. Yeah, you're totally right. It's a conundrum. I don't know who could afford it. And to be honest, I don't think Mike will trade any of the good quarterbacks. So Pat Mahomes, CJ Stroud, I think, are off the table, like, forever. If Richardson, Lawrence, or Tua start to look a little iffy, I think that's when you'll see Mike try and make a move to get off those guys so that he doesn't have to, like, because that's what he did with Zach Wilson. He timed the market so well with Zach Wilson. And I think that's probably the long-term strategy here is, like, if they become ultimate blue chippers, great. But I think Tua, Trevor, and Richardson have question marks around their longevity. You know, I mean, Tua and Lawrence just signed big contracts, but they're not great fantasy starters. You don't feel awesome about putting them in your starting lineup.
Yeah. I think one of, you know, something Mike has been really good at is that he's patient and he doesn't make deals that he's not, you know, excited about. And so I guess, like, the upside here is that even though this is a perfect example of a year where he's certainly good enough that he could kind of, you know, cut bait with one or two of these quarterbacks to go seriously upgrade his position players, but he doesn't necessarily have to. It's not like his window, you know, closes after next season or anything like that. Like he's definitely at the beginning of what probably could be a 5 or 6 year window of competing. So it's like, it doesn't have to be this year that he goes all in, but it's also like, man, how much longer are you going to hog up five, you know, those five roster spots when you can only start two?
Yeah.
You know, with all those players. So I think that's going to be interesting. I'm curious. So I have a question for you similar, you know, based on your analysis. You talked about Sloan being a notch above Austin and I. I'm going to present to you my theory on one of the reasons that I don't like Sloan's team.
Oh, quite as much. I'm ready for it. Yeah, tell me.
So Sloan talks about his boom boys all the time, and he has excellent, excellent boom boys, especially like kind of his top five of Jared Goff, Kirk Cousins, Christian McCaffrey, Jahmyr Gibbs, Tyreek Hill, Brandon Ayuk. I think that was actually six. So his top six, awesome. Mark Andrews is a quality tight end, but he's a tight end. To me, his flex positions are like among the worst in the league. Unless you buy the idea that Raheem Mostert is going to, you know, repeat as a top five, top 10, you know, fantasy running back this year. To me, I think Raheem Mostert is a candidate to completely fall off a cliff. As much as I love him from Purdue, especially with them drafting a running back, you know, and Devon Achane clearly being, you know, a great pick. So I hate his flex room kind of up and down, and the bench is just completely barren, in my opinion. And so to me, it's like, it's one or two injuries, it's bye weeks being spread out, and it's a really bad flex room that to me feels like there's potential for a less than impressive season. What is your analysis of that?
I would agree with you. I mean, when you look at, he was texting me today because I put Diggs on the trade block, and you know, I'm not putting Diggs on the trade block with where any of the trade calculators have his value at, which I think is like equivalent to Calvin Ridley. You guys all know where I'm at on Calvin Ridley. Let me know if you have an offer. I think the best I got was like 2.9 in our draft, which is bad.
That is bad.
That's bad. He's going to be better than, you know, he's going to be better than that. But he has so little to offer in trades right now outside of his picks. And all he really has is his 25 first and his 26 second. I think he gave up his 26 first for Miles Sanders. I think that was the deal.
Yeah.
Where he lost that. Again, great deal by Mike, but yeah, he's in kind of a weird year. I think if he stays healthy, he is a playoff team. Big if. Like, I think McCaffrey, Gibbs, and Tyreek Hill, if they're healthy, will get you to the playoffs just because you're going to get 20 to 30 points probably on average across those three guys. I do think he is a contender to tear it down this year. I think there would be a lot of merit in that. Obviously, it's scary to like potentially go to Waffle House and risk having to, you know, go through that horrible experience, but he doesn't have a lot of years of contention left, especially with the aging roster with Mostert, Hill, McCaffrey, right? Like, and Kirk Cousins too. Like, those are cornerstone players who are going to age out, and he doesn't have the draft capital to replace them. So I think it's reasonable. I just think the upside of those guys versus, you know, on your team, Breece Hall, obviously really good. AJ Brown, good. After that, I think Burrow and Herbert, I don't know about them this year. There's a lot of question marks there. Austin's kind of similar in terms of having, you know, Saquon, JT, who are really good. But outside of those two, I'm not totally sure. Starting Caleb Williams, Matthew Stafford, like that, I'm hoping that there'll be some intrigue for that fourth playoff spot. And it's not just like a lock like it always has been.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's also potential for what you're saying about Sloan, also for Tommy too. His team, I think, doesn't have a ton of great depth. I mean, his best bench player right now is Tyler Lockett, who is also a big question mark. So I don't know. I'm just hoping. I think my goal for the season is that we at least see a little bit more variety than what we've seen in the last few seasons.
Yeah, I agree with that analysis too. And I think the point I'm trying to make too is not necessarily that I would, like bet on Austin Rice roster, beating out Sloan or a Tommy, but I think Austin and I both have pretty high floors with maybe lower ceilings than other teams. Whereas I think Sloan and Tommy both have sky high ceilings with also potentially pretty low floors. Imagine if we're in a Christian McCaffrey injury year where by week four, he's Josh cross his fingers for those.
Jordan
for those
Mason
listening.
Holder over here, $5 on waivers. Yeah. Thank you for that, guys.
So imagine if we're in a Christian McCaffrey injury year and he's out by week three or week four, for 10 weeks or for the season or whatever. And then it's like, it gets like, that would be tough. That would be really tough to overcome. And I think it's a bad year. You talk about Sloan potentially being a candidate to blow it up. I think Tommy probably could too, if the season didn't go well, but it's like, it's a terrible year to blow it up because who are you going to blow it up to? Like, Matt's not going to deal, all he holds like 40% of the first round this year. He's not going to deal his picks for Tyreek Hill and Christian McCaffrey, as good as they are. They don't fit his timeline. So like, why? And he's not going to blow it up for, maybe he would for like a Jared Goff, who's clearly going to be around for a while, but like, you're not blowing it up for Kirk Cousins or Baker Mayfield or, maybe Brandon Ayuk, since he just signed his big deal. But anyway, you get my point.
But Brandon Ayuk is a player you want to keep if you're blowing it up, right? You don't want to get rid of your young. I think you're totally right. I mean, most of the pieces have settled. I think the only real buyer of blow it up right now would be Mike, because he does have a lot of assets. And that's where, to the point
that's
that it'll be interesting to see if he is willing to trade for older players. He hasn't shown that he's willing to do it at all up to this point. And he hasn't really needed to, but Mike getting somebody like Christian McCaffrey, like if he gets Christian McCaffrey and McCaffrey stays healthy, big if, it does vault his team to like essentially a lock for the playoffs, I think, at that point.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I would definitely agree. I had another question for you too. I got to remind myself what it was. How if we're assuming that Ongud finishes last, and I'm not trying to pile on Ongud, how big of a gap do you think it is between Ongud and the ninth place team? Because this is something where I'll have my answer too. I want to come back to this, if we remember at the end of the season, and who knows, maybe Ongud doesn't come in last, maybe somebody else does, but if he does, I'm curious if it's, a similar spread to what we think.
I think it's by I think every single player on his team has, besides his quarterbacks, and even Jordan Love has some question marks, has serious bust potential of they could be worth nothing by the time the season is over. Sorry, Ongood. I know it just feels bad, but and obviously every team has that, but there's some players that are going to be good. I think he's probably coming in last by, what did the table end at last year? I don't want to what was last place at? Do you know where it ended?
I think it was less than 10, because we did the tanking at the end of the year. A lot of teams tanked to kind of avoid it. So I would hazard a guess of in the 8 to 12 range.
I mean, I think it will be significant. I'm guessing 10 to 15 points. I don't think it's close heading into the end. I think we'll know with 3 weeks left in the season that he is going to finish last, unless something
I think so
happens.
Too.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say 20. Like, right. I'm not trying to pile on, but I don't know what week. I don't know what week he doesn't finish in last. And that's probably going to come back to bite me, because it probably means that I'm going to come in last to him multiple times this season.
Yeah,
but it's just I feel for him. I think it's a long road ahead. I know he's so he's certainly capable of getting his team back to the top, but it might take a while. I think something like pivoting back a little bit to our conversation about slowing and blowing it up and stuff, I think the farther we've gotten into this league, the harder it is to like truly tank, blow it up, and rebuild a dynasty contender, because like it feels like people have realized how long and difficult that road could be. Like, I mean, I tried to do it. I would say I'm like 60% of the way there. I'm like, I'm obviously not a team that's going to finish in last, but I'm also like, I did all of that and I'm still not like the best team in the league or a top two or three team in the league. Mike seems to have done it better than I did, and Mike seems to be getting himself there, but it's also, he's not all the way there yet. He's probably 75 to 80% of the way there. And meanwhile, we have you, Dylan, Tommy, Sloan, just consistently at the top of the league. You know, you make a lot of deals, obviously, but the other three, like, very few deals, stick to what you know. Like,
yeah. It's I think the idea of a rebuild is a lot more fun than the actual, because so many things have to go right if you're going to rebuild. Like, you get a player like AJ Brown and that's great, but you need a few AJ Browns to make the playoffs. And so getting all that through the draft is really hard. I agree with you. I think people probably are a little bit scared of fully rebuilding. Ongood, I wouldn't say is rebuilding. I just think he's in like a bad position right now, right? Like, it is a forced rebuild rather than a chosen rebuild. But yeah, I think probably the idea is more to retool. I still think personally in our league, there is a severe undervaluing of vets. People do not ever buy vets, ever. Everyone is scared of anybody over the age of 28. It's like, if you're over 28, I will not. I think Colin and I have been involved in maybe 60% of the deals involving players over the age of 28 in terms of the trades that have actually happened. And I think that if I had to say one thing that's likely to change in our league, it's that. Because if you're one of these teams that is like maybe like a year team, like trading some of those second round picks for I think I have a lot of old players, so it's easy to look at players on my team. But for Calvin Ridley's, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, players that you could get a year or two of solid production out of without, like, if you're getting a late second, you're getting a crapshoot at that point. We could go back on it, and we should do that this year, go back and look at the first 2 years of second round picks and see what the actual hit rate is there. Cause I bet it's going to be pretty bad. Like, when we go and check it out.
Yeah. We'll definitely do that. That would be a blast.
Yeah. So I don't know. I totally agree with your point. I think it'll be interesting to see what these teams actually do, because injuries are going to start to pile up. I mean, I'm sure it could impact my team, Dylan's team, Mike's team. Everybody can get hit by these things. But I think it's a good transition into, we look at the end of the season, the power rankings are a good place to start. What are you thinking about? What's your prediction for the four playoff teams when all is said and done?
Yeah. So I'm going to go in order in terms of where I think they finish the season. I think Matt had the playoff teams correct. I just don't think they were in the right order. So I would say that you would be number one. Mike would be number two for me, actually. I think he's going to have a huge year. I think Dylan is going to be number three. And I think Tommy and Sloan are probably going to be battling for that spot. And I'm actually going to go Sloan. I'm going to switch it up a little bit. I think Sloan will be the fourth playoff team. As much as I just crapped on his team earlier, I still think he's got a high enough ceiling to be able to do it. And I just think, like, Tommy's had 3 years in a row where I mean, he's done an awesome job setting his lineup. It's not taking anything away from him, but like, he's had a lot of stuff break his way. I think this is maybe the first year where it doesn't break his way. What are your thoughts on that, and who are your four?
I think it's very reasonable. I mean, I want a little bit more variety, so I think it would be fun if it was more like, you know, obviously if I don't make the playoffs, I would be in a horrible mood. It took me a while after last year to really, I was really glad that we just locked everything up after the league and we're like, we'll revisit it in, you know, 6 months, because after the end of last season, I was maybe the most sick of fantasy football that I've ever been. I'm feeling re-energized coming back this year, but I think I have to make the playoffs. With the, how old my team is, with how I've structured it, like, it is a playoffs or bust kind of league. Yeah. So I think it's me. I do think it's probably Dylan as another team. I kind of look at his lineup and I'm like, it's good, but it's not. I think it's going to – so I'll go me first probably. I just think based on projection, that's what you have to say now. Obviously, injuries, things can pile up, whatever. Knock on wood for me, obviously. But me first, I'm going to go Sloan second. I feel like Sloan always finds a way to kind of – like something will break his way. Ramondre, Mostert, like I think there's something there. I'm going to go – Mike third, and I'm going to go Tommy fourth. I'm going to say that Dylan falls out of the playoffs this year. I just think there's a few question marks there. I think he's going to have to start managing his team a little bit this year, and he's never really had to do that. So he's got three tight ends, and you really only want to start one of those, and it's Sam Laporta. The other two are just like, maybe in a couple years, or who knows what happens with Kirk Cousins. So yeah, that's where I'm at. But I think we're all still kind of in the same place. It's these five teams floating. And if something major happens, then you or Austin, I think, could jump into that fourth playoff spot.
Yeah, I think Austin and I, to get up in there, would either need multiple significant injuries to one of the five teams above us, or we would need like probably one to two breakout type seasons from players that we're not necessarily expecting on our own rosters. So I think that's totally fair. So out of those four, who is your champion?
I mean, it has to be me, right? Like, it has to be me. Yeah. Like, it's probably Tommy. Too. It's probably Tommy, but at this point, if I'm not the preseason favorite to win, but my dark horse is probably Mike. Mike, I think, has the most assets to make a huge move to go in. I think at this point, I would be really scared to start trading for more 30-year-old players. And I just said like, oh, there's a thing, but I have a lot of them on my team, right? Like,
yeah.
At a certain point, you have to just say my team is good enough. And I think that's what happened to me last year. And that ended up being a bad decision of being like, I need to go get Devontae Adams and Stephon Diggs. And obviously CeeDee Lamb was really good, but I gave up a lot in that trade. Like, I look back on that, and I'm like, that was a big trade that I made. So I don't know. I think Mike's probably the sleeper to win it this year, but yeah, I think hopefully it's a good year this year. I don't want it to be so just like cut and dry about where everything ends, but
how much would it kill you if Mike won a championship after having completely tanked his roster for 3 years to then just come in his year one of competing and instantly win one?
Well, the good news is we already know that fantasy football is a fucking joke because Tommy has won 3 years in a row, right?
Like, very true.
If it would have been like me, Sloan, Dylan, you know, like the first 3 years, it might have been like, it would hurt. I'm gonna be honest, it would hurt if Mike won.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, you know, fantasy football is a joke, but for it to work so perfectly for him to, like, you know, swindle people for the first 3 years, and then I know he's going to get pissed about that, but to swindle people for 3 years and then win a championship before me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I know I've said this before, but it like, I would feel very bad for you. Honestly, I think it would be quite a storyline, but that would be a really tough pill to swallow. I know I've made this observation before on the pod, but it absolutely blows my mind that the earliest date that anybody else in the league could have more championships than Tommy is December of 2027.
That's crazy.
That is wild. And that, it, of course, requires four in a row from a new champion this year. Like, that to me, just like, let that sink in, like the run that Tommy has had over these last 3 years, like for how long it is going to take for anybody to catch him. Like, he's crazy. The Steelers or the Cowboys of the
Brian, boys. Let me pose a question to you. Would you ever be in favor of a league reset at some point?
No,
never.
Defeats the point of dynasty. Like, you're in this for the long haul. Like, I want us to have our rosters until we're 70. Like,
If Ongood comes to us and he's like, I'm going to quit the league if you're still like, no.
No. And it's not even just any of the group. Like, nope, we'll find a replacement.
I think if Ongood said he was going to quit, we would have to cover like 3 years of league dues to find a backfill for his team.
I bet we could get one. We could totally get one.
You think we could?
Yeah. I think Ryan would do it.
Really? And
yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, what a welcome to Dynasty.
He seriously considered yes, I know. He seriously considered the Reddit League, so. But yeah, no, I think he would take a team if somebody left. But anyway, so you are in favor of a potential league reset?
I could see it being fun. I think what we're going to see over the next few years is that the league is going to pay the consequences of the first year and a half where nobody really knew what they were doing, you know?
Yeah.
And like, Tommy winning three championships, I don't really think was a product of that, but I think once we get into these next few years, Mike's team is insane, right? Like all of those young guys and a bunch of draft assets and a bunch of quarterbacks. Like, fortunately, I think Mike's team is the only team that is truly like a tier above everyone else from a dynasty perspective. I think after you get to Mike, there's like cases to be made for kind of everyone starting to even out over time. So
see, I think the only thing that could get me there is if we get to a point where we have like six teams that are dominant and competing for the playoffs and they have all the good assets between them. And then four teams that are terrible every single year. And we start to get to the point where like, The four teams' owners aren't setting their lineups, or they're not tracking waivers, or you know that kind of stuff because they're so far out of it.
Yeah,
that could maybe get me there. And I do like that is definitely a worry of mine is that we head down a path where like especially as like kids come into the picture and all that kind of stuff for some of the other group, like that some just care less and less, I guess, and allow their teams to kind of get into, you know, pretty rough territory. And I think at that point it would probably be worth it. But, you know, for as long as everybody is still, you know, mentally engaged in the league and setting their lineups and keeping up with, you know, roster movement and all that kind of stuff, I don't know. You should be forced to sleep in the bed that you made for yourself.
I mean, it's more fun that way. I think we need to maybe figure out a way, like, yeah, I don't know. This is just like thought, but maybe figure out a way to make it easier for the bad teams to be good at some point if that does happen. But I don't know what that would be.
I would see it. I would love to consider like some type of like compensatory pick type deal where it's like I don't know how it would work, but it's like you do the first full round, you know, maybe you do the first five picks of the second round, and then there's like two compensatory picks or three compensatory picks in the middle of the second round that are for whoever, like, doesn't matter if you traded picks or whatever, you can't trade the compensatory picks. It's just whoever had the worst record and the second worst record, you get the 16th and 17th picks in the draft. And then we continue with, you know, picks as it is. Or, you know, maybe it's something where
extra fab.
Extra fab. Just... yeah. First loan to trade. and never use. I don't know. I feel like there's some stuff we could throw around.
I agree. I mean, it's down the road and it would be out of the kindness of whoever is in first place's heart at that point. So I think we're a ways away from there. It should hopefully be a really good year this year.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I know kickoff is about to happen for the first game. So one thing we didn't touch on last place, I think we're both, it's just on good unless you it have. Is. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah.
One quick thing to for everybody to keep their eye out for this week specifically. Every single year, I believe, that we have done this dynasty, I have had a player in my week one lineup score 0 points.
So really?
I'm pretty sure, maybe not the first year, but definitely the last 2 years, I have had a player score 0 points in opening week. So this will be a huge, honestly, if all my players get positive points this week, even if I come in last, I will be a happy camper for week one.
I think you're in pretty good shape to not. I mean, I could see Jake Ferguson going zero.
Yeah. Yep. But... Jake Ferguson's probably my worst, my biggest option. I think last year, I'll have to look back and see. One year it was Elijah Mitchell because he got injured like immediately. And then one was, who was it? I'll have to look. I'll text in the group later. But...
Oh, I like how when you're looking at people's lineups, you can see their auto subs. Like,
yep,
I can. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to give me 90 seconds on the auto sub feature? I'm Go you ahead, and I Brian. Run opposite sides of this. So I want to hear your thoughts.
I think that like figuring out who you want to sit and start is one of the only things we actually control as fantasy managers.
Yeah,
I get it because we've done the main reason I'm for doing it for the same time slots is because we've had scenarios over the last year where people have been like, hey, I'm going to be in XYZ. I can't check my phone. If this guy gets hurt, can I start this guy?
Yeah.
And so we've done versions of it in the past. And so I'm like, why not? And it gives no excuse to people who like don't set their lineup for the same time. So I think if you do the like earlier time players are allowed to sub in for later players, it's too easy. You know, like you don't even have to consider like, oh, DeAndre Hopkins is questionable for the 10th week in a row. Do I think he's actually going to play, you know?
Yeah.
And I can just put him in my lineup basically risk-free.
Yeah. I think I that's a very valid point. I think it's reasonable. I just like the idea of that you don't necessarily have to be like glued to your phone for the 15 minutes right before kickoff to make sure like nothing crazy happened. I just wish for all of us a little bit of peace in those last 15 to 20 minutes where we can spend time with our partners or, you know, get something done or whatever without having to be maniacally watching Twitter and Instagram and Sleeper. But
that's wholesome.
Also, I just wish that for all of us. So I think we should each take it upon ourselves to do something productive in the 15 minutes before the 1 o'clock games this week, whether it's do a puzzle with your partner, you know, go, you know, cut the grass, play with your dog, whatever it is, do something wholesome, maybe journal. Text in the group what you're doing. Yep. Journal, read, all of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you made it to this part, you know, please just 15 minutes before kickoff on Sunday, let us know what you did with your extra time. I will be staring at my phone most likely, but
I'm sure I will be too.
We can hope.
Yeah.
All right, Brian. Well, Thursday night game is about to kick off. I wish you the best of luck in your watching experience. I'm so glad you texted me. This has been great. Looking forward to getting the season started.
Same. Yeah, I hope this is the first of many Josh and Brian pods this year. So
I think it will be. All right.
Yeah. Happy week one, everybody. See you guys. Bye.